Welcome to the Authentically Successful Show After Hours, where my co-host Rob Swimer and I share our two cents on hot topics in the business world. Rob is a veteran sales leader in high tech, best-selling author, resilience coach, and speaker. And I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime professional recruiter and executive coach, the creator of talent-centric organizations, and also a best-selling author. Combined, we have 70 years of experience in this world. So let's get into it.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Authentically Successful After Hours with me, Rob Swimer, and my co-host, Carol Schultz. Carol, we're going to dive right in here today. I read an article a few weeks ago. Virtual meetings are killing the vibe. And here's what to do about it. It was a best-selling author, actually, Priya Parker. She wrote a book called The Art of Gathering, and she's done a lot of studies about how people gather in the workplace and the do's and don'ts. And anyways, the Wall Street Journal put an article out and talked a little bit about what's happening in today's virtual world or hybrid working space. I got a lot to talk about here, but I wanted to get your opinion. You know, you've got, what, three decades plus in the industry here. What I want to see what your thoughts are first, and then I'm going to dive in and give you a couple of my opinions because I lived through this for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, this, you know, we could talk about this at nauseam, I think, but I want to say that I sent this article to two of my clients. We'll just start there and we can talk about what she has to say in the article. But I sent this to two of my clients. The first was Align Impact, the co-founder and CEO by the name of Jennifer Kenning. And the reason I sent it to them is because Jen, the CEO, lives here in Denver and her offices are in New York and Los Angeles.
Oh, I get it. Yeah.
And she actually used to live in LA, but she relocated here during the pandemic. So needless to say, she does a good bit of traveling. And I asked them to take a look at it. And, you know, what they're up to is what is, I mean, what Priya talks about in her book and subsequently in this article, they are aiming to design for their culture, right? So they intentionally gather 2 days a week in office, wherever the offices are, right? And Jen travels to the different offices a couple of times a month. And that, of course, promotes the serendipitous connections, right? And enhance their learning, especially for new employees.
Yeah.
And it, you know, clearly articulates meeting needs, and optimizing time by outlining the roles and expectations of everyone in it, right? And of course, we talked about in our episode on performance reviews, the importance of specific measurable results and creating proper expectations. So this is part of what Jen is up to, you know, along with her team at her company. You know, they really want to ensure the experience and time spent working at Align is meaningful both for employees and that it's really human centered, right? So I will also make a note that right now they get the entire team, the entire organization together twice a year. Yeah. I know their goal is to be quarterly, but right now they're doing it every 6 months, right? So they just had one, I think it was in North Carolina. The next one they have will be sometime later this summer and everybody will come here to Denver for that. The other client I talked to was the CEO of a company called Procurability. His name is Conrad Snover. They have actually been fully remote for almost 30 years, right? So that's pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
Or any kind of a shift in the workforce mindset, right? They're actually proof, he says, that firms can not only just survive, but thrive amidst a virtual vibe. So, you know, he says they have a really cutting edge approach to remote work, which has led them to innovate and connect in ways that align with today's tech savvy lifestyle and the pursuit of fulfilling work-life balance, right? They've got programs that bring together their community of colleagues remotely or through their employee resource group. I'm actually speaking to their women's ERG later on this spring.
Oh, cool.
As well as their culture team. They do in person when they volunteer for charitable organizations and they pick those based on what their team members are passionate about supporting, right? So being able to create those close-knit remote culture is really a testament to the resilience, creativity, and forward-thinking spirit of his team. And as a result, he says, we've seen remarkable results in recruiting the industry's top talent, not hindered by limited pools of candidates based on geographic location, and with retaining our professionals. In fact, we have one of the highest retention rates in their industry. Our people join Procurability to be part of the industry's leading procurement services firm and stay because of their strong culture, flexible work model, and acceptable opportunities for growth.
Wow.
So this is something that they've been doing for, you know, as long as I've been in the business, right? And you know, you as well. But so I just kind of wanted to kick it off with that because what this is a testament to for both of these CEOs is their work and their commitment to not falling into the trap that many other companies are falling into.
No, I get it. I get it. I got to tell you, I am, as we say in Boston, I am wicked surprised. Wicked surprised about the kind of results they're getting with a totally hybrid. Now, if they've done it for 30 years, that is their culture. So it works. Yeah, I guess that's great. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be a little bit, I love you, Carol. You know, I've known you a long time, but I'm not going to totally agree with this stuff because mm-hmm. I'll tell you why is because I lived and breathed this. My last post with my company, Splunk, that I was the group vice president in London, and I had to run that whole country, UK and I. And I got there, what, a month before COVID, as you know. And my life came in much unexpected. I had to change my whole expectations of traveling Europe for 2 years and seeing the Eiffel Tower for the first time. And none of that happened. I got to see the flat in my apartment in all four rooms and got to know them very well. For several months at a time, I could say. So, and there are still people that worked for me there that I have not met personally. And I've been back, 2 years now. My point is, I really had to focus on reinventing myself as a leader. I had to reinvent myself as a person that would be able to empower the people under my charge over Zoom, never meeting them for mm-hmm. months at a time. And I just know how difficult it was and how much I really had to rely on the skills that I had on all the personal development I did to get myself in that state to really be able to empower those people when I got on a Zoom. And I was doing Zooms over and over again for 12 hours a day, sometimes not even a stop. So I am amazed by those results. Kudos to them. I think if it's part of the culture, hey, have at it. What we're dealing with now is the hybrid culture. We're dealing with a lot of companies that are just starting to figure this out. And we over-rotated. And, you know, I don't want any hate mail here, but I'm going to say it. You know, you dress casual, you work casual. You live casual, you work casual. You know, they're on their couch at the conference calls. They're playing with their dog on the conference calls. they're eating their lunch on the conference call. Whatever they're doing. Mm. On the Zoom, you know, I just don't get it because, you know, you have to be present.
Yes.
You have to be mindful and you have to be present for the entire organization. And it's a courtesy for the people on those calls. So these virtual meetings they're great. It's a great technology. Don't get me wrong. I hope people understand this is awesome. And as a speaker on the global stage, I can do this in my studio here and touch people all over the world. I love it. It's the disconnection of the culture, and it's the ability to build the strong culture that they believe they're part of something bigger than themselves. And it's so difficult to do that over Zoom. There are tricks of the trade, and there are things that you can do, but you have to be a student of that game to really understand that. Like, I used to show my hands a lot. People would say, why are you showing your hands so much? Because I don't want them thinking I'm on email or I'm doing something else. I want them to see I'm here. I looked right in the camera. I wasn't worried about, you know, what my hair looked like for the day. You know, it's all those things that are little tricks. But I am concerned about the fact that we're going to over-rotate because of technology and AI and all this stuff coming up. How do we coexist with all this technology and still have that, you know, that unbelievable culture that draws us to the companies that we want to work for? So that's my little give and take. You take it from there, but I'm concerned. I'm really concerned.
I don't disagree with you.
You can.
I'm well aware of that. Thanks for the permission to do that. Appreciate that a lot. So as I'm listening to you talk about this, what I'm thinking of is how we first met.
Yeah.
On the phone.
On the phone.
Okay, because for those listening, Rob and I are so old, there was no internet when we first met. Oy vey.
While you were out, mate. Yeah.
Right. Oh, really, there was no internet when we first met.
No, there wasn't.
We didn't have AOL or anything like that at that point.
We had Rolodexes.
Yes, it came soon after, within a couple of years. But anyway, so how did people build relationships then? Now, granted, I had an office and I had people I worked with in that office. I didn't particularly like all those people, but that's a topic for, you know, a different day. But yeah, you know, and people were busy and you were in your office and you were working and you were, you know, talking to your candidates and, you know, yada, yada, and your clients and so on and so forth. But, you know, we first met over the phone.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can remember how many years it was from then when starting to build that relationship, you know, first as a, you know, the headhunter candidate and then headhunter client. And then of course we became friends after that, but you know, and that was all sort of building that relationship throughout. And I think the first time we met in person was when you were in New York. We were doing a search for you and your buddy Steve Leahy.
Yeah.
I think that's when that was. And I don't remember what year that was.
Was that Union Square?
We went for Portuguese somewhere.
Portuguese, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Manhattan. I remember that. Yeah.
I think it was around Columbus Circle, actually.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay,
wasn't
I do
it?
Remember
I think
that.
It was on the south end of Columbus Circle. Anyway. You know, and I don't remember how many years later that was from when we met. 5 years, 6 years, maybe less. I don't know. But the bottom line is, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking we built a really great relationship. You know, with hardly ever having to we've never even seen each other.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
So
you're right.
So what I have to wonder is, is our reliance on technology is what's causing this?
Gosh, you know, wow, what a great point.
I could pick up the phone and call so many people I've known as long as you and haven't talked to in maybe 10 years or more. And they would take my call.
Right, right. Well, and there's another thing that's completely, you know, completely gets me and it irks me is that no one uses the phone anymore for voice-to-voice. I'd be happy going back to that, Carol. I would love to be able to pick up. My phone rings twice a day. One of it's a spam, you know, and the other one's my kid asking for money. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, you know, no one calls anybody anymore. They text, they Slack, they even email is like, yeah, we get a lot of emails, but I'll get more text than emails. They don't even pick up the phone. They'll text. I'll call them to try and build that relationship voice to voice. And they don't pick up the goddamn phone because they're texting.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, we could talk about this all day long and you know, maybe the over rotation, I think you maybe hit it. I think you said it. And if I can paraphrase you, the over rotation is really about what technology is available.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it was the phone. So we did everything by the phone. And if we were lucky enough to get a lunch or a dinner or a cup of coffee, that was great. We could build that relationship face to face and we'd give each other a hug and say, hey, that was awesome. Great to see you. Now we've got so much technology that we've over rotated again to say, you know, we're the first ones that plug in, hey, it's a Zoom meeting. Boom, you're on Zoom.
Yeah.
Now you've got that pressure. Now you've got that, is a camera on, is a camera off? Do I do virtual background or I show my room?
That's right.
Right? We can go there too. There's a whole nother can of worms that's going on now. And people are they're conscious of it, and they're, I think that there's stress around it because, you know, do I show where I live or do I not? So go ahead.
Well, yeah. And we talked a little bit about this and, you know, I want to read something that she mentioned in the article. She says, for me, I prefer phone calls. Zoom is high touch, but it's quite draining staring at our own face, not having exact times for mirroring back and forth. Leaders in the future will know that cameras on Zoom on is the highest value real estate. The teams I work with develop norms as to what's a phone call, what's Slack, what's Zoom, et cetera. And it's the same for people that I work with. It's the talk I do on communication. And when we teach people how to communication, different tools are appropriate in different situations. Okay.
That's it.
I don't, you know, I will say when she says Zoom is quite draining staring at our own face, I call bullshit on that.
So
because I am talking to you right now and I'm not looking at you. Okay. Or myself, I might add.
Same here.
I have that screen completely covered up. Why? Because if I start looking around on my screen, I'm actually not looking at my camera.
Right.
So it's partly you have to train yourself to do this. It doesn't come naturally. I don't think. Most people are like, oh, look, there I am. Or, oh, there I am. And that's why I think it's just too easy to say you're busy staring at yourself. No, you're not. You need to teach people just not to do that.
Right. And you know, Zoom has a feature where you can turn off your face so you can not see yourself in Zoom. So, I learned that as I was doing all the talks. And
I have to find that, because I did not know that. And I love that.
Yeah, it's a great thing, and typically I'm putting the face over the camera, so I'm being engaged. You can see I'm looking right at you. So the reality is that you have to really know how to use the technology to the advantage, so you can make that connection. I think you said that. Look, technology. It depends on where you are, what situation, and what technology you use. But the key to put a bow around this is to not over-rotate. Yeah. To not over-rotate that it's always Zoom, or it's always a text, or it's always Slack. And these cultures now are getting out of hand. They're like, oh, we use Slack for everything. And it's like, why? Why don't you use everything? Why don't you use a little bit of everything so people get a flavor for it? I could not imagine doing executive life coaching with the vulnerability and the empathy that I need to demonstrate back and forth a two-way street without having the camera on if I'm doing a virtual. I wouldn't be able to do that over the phone. Now, I have skills to learn, and I can kind of sense the body language from the voice over the phone.
Right.
But, geez, I need to see that body language. I need to see if they're hunched down or if they're up. You know, are they in winter pose or they not? And that's when the technology happens. So I think you're right. I think it's not so much an over-rotation. I think you've got me now where I'm kind of changing a little bit. I think it's more use the technology for the right place, the right time, and the right situation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much at our disposal. Why not use a little bit of everything to make it happen? Right?
Well, and that's exactly what I do, right? And, sure. And I think, you know, one of the hardest things for people is, you know, we talked a little bit about Zoom etiquette. So
yo.
I want to talk a little bit about that specifically before, you know, while we're here. And so, first of all, some people are just better on camera than others. I like to think, I mean, I have a lot of Zoom meetings. We're not recording on Zoom, by the way. We're recording on a podcasting platform. But even when I'm on Zoom, I think the fact that I spent so many years on the phone and how difficult that is to build a relationship over the phone and not seeing somebody, right?
Yeah.
Gave me really a leg up when I started using Zoom on a regular basis instead of intermittently. I've had people say to me, you know, oh, you're so passionate or you're so that. Not everybody's great in front of a camera. And I think what you have to remember is, I mean, like I said, I'm not looking at you. I am listening to you right now, which is allowing me to truly be, because I'm not distracted by your face.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. I mean, I'm not distracted by anything, obviously, right? So,
I get it, yeah.
But I'm able to just sit here with the notes I want to talk about and just really listening to you. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, in an intentional way.
Yeah.
And I think that's hard for a lot of people. One, a lot of people have never been trained how to listen. Okay, that's, you know, that's a conversation we can get into some other time.
Yeah.
On you know, communication methods, but you know, people aren't we're taught to read, we're taught to write, we're taught to, you know, we know how to hear, but we don't always learn how to listen.
Yeah.
And what that entails, right? So, you know, I think that, you know, when we're starting to talk about Zoom etiquette, right? So one is, like, before I get on these calls, I close everything on my desktop.
Yes.
I put my phone on Do Not Disturb. That's how I stay present with you or anybody else I may be on the phone with. I'm not, right. You know, I'm not typing away and, oh, maybe nobody will notice that I'm, you know, hands, looking up something and my hands are moving around. Right. I'm actually in the camera and engaged in the conversation.
Right.
We also talked, and I want to hear your opinion about this, because okay. I think we might have some differing opinions. The background.
Yeah.
Right. This is my actual real background. This is my office. There's pictures on the wall. There's some skulls that I found out writing. There's all sorts of, you know, interesting tchotchkes back here. Now, could that be distracting to someone? I guess if they're not paying attention, it could be.
It could be, but it also, for me, it's a way to get a connection with somebody mm-hmm. like yourself, because I know what your interests are.
Right.
You know that my interest is probably the ocean where I live here. And maybe I have, you know, medals or trophies or a club, you know, whatever it is, or I have pictures of my grandkids. And, you know, I think that it's the vulnerability, you know, builds trust. And it's, I say that all the time, and I really truly believe that. And if you have a chance to show a little vulnerability of who you are and what you stand for and what you believe and what your family is like, I think it builds trust in a subconscious level when you're in a meeting. I think it's really important. We do that when I'm in a meeting personally, you know, face to face. I try and make that human connection by looking at, you know, what's in that person's office.
That's right.
You know what? You know, that's sales 101.
I was hoping you were going to bring. I was exactly going to say that if you weren't.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you probably taught me it too way back. It's like, hey, when you go on an interview, for crying out loud, look at his desk and see if he's got a picture of his family and say, you've got two kids, whatever. I mean, say something.
You know, golf trophy. I mean, the pictures on the wall, all those things tell you something, you know, so that you can spend the first 2, 3, maybe 4 minutes before you get down to whatever the business, whether it's an interview or the business, you're selling somebody, whatever that is, spend a few minutes noticing what's around them.
Yep.
And engage in that relationship building conversation, right? You cannot do that when you have a fake background.
Exactly. And it's all part of etiquette that we're talking about. This is exactly what it's about. And I did a talk at a kickoff with my dear friend, Marva Baylor, who wrote a book, mm-hmm. Be Unexpected. And we did a whole talk about how do you make that human connection? We did a role play of how not to do it and then how to do it. And it's so easy to make a human connection when you ask about somebody and what lights them up, what are they passionate about? You know, and you don't talk about business, you don't talk about yourself. Mm-hmm. These are all things that we do. And that's all part of the etiquette of a business meeting. It's the same thing on Zoom. And I will say that the virtual backgrounds, just drive me crazy. Cause you're, you know, you've got the half head, the floating head,
that's
like back
right.
in the Saturday
and then if they
Night
move out of the way a little bit. Yeah.
You remember the floating head on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't really want to do that. And there are ways, by the way, there's ways to hack that. You get a green screen and then you don't have that problem. So mm-hmm. it's how much you want to invest in the Zoom world. But the, you know, for me, when I'm asked into somebody's living room or their office, I feel honored. Mm-hmm. I feel grateful. Mm-hmm. I acknowledge that, in the meeting. Every single time, and I let them know it's okay. You know, if the cat runs across the screen or you see just a little cat tail on the keyboard, I know that happens at yours a lot.
It happens frequently at my desk.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Mm. Or, you know, your little baby is, has come in the room or the toddler wants to see dad. It's like, hey, I want to meet the son, right? So I think it's an inclusion thing. I think it's a vulnerability that builds trust. And I think that it's a wonderful thing. So I've been able to really, I've been able to use the Zoom and the technology as a massive advantage of how to build not only a human connection, but also do the coaching that I need to do by seeing that individual and seeing how they're reacting. Yeah. And the words they're using.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So, you know, and one of the final things that she says in this article is, in the future, there will also be more norms around Zoom backgrounds, blurred versus not. Whether or not your background is a fancy living room or a shoebox apartment, it's information that does not ricochet equally. I think we'll look back at this time and be shocked at the lack of care of what we ask employees to show or not show without actually thinking about it. That she happens to be right about. It's blurred versus not, whatever you do. I think if you know, you as a CEO are building the type of company where people you're hiring a lot of diverse people, culturally different, but you know, everybody's been hired around the culture that you've built, they're all in agreement with it, you know, rah, 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 then people should not be judging other people. Okay. Now, there are, you know, we do have these biases. Everybody has some biases. But,
that's right.
You know, part of the work these executives need to do is to start working, either that or bring somebody in like you or me, right? That's going to come and start working with their team and start to really look at these types of biases and how do you get past these things? Because I shouldn't have to blur what's in my background, right? I shouldn't have to have somebody who's making this up here, right? Somebody sees that antelope that's actually a pronghorn back there on my desk behind me, on that table. And I had somebody say once, "Oh, did you shoot that?" I said, "No, I found it out on the ranch riding one day."
Oh my gosh.
But, you know, the point is, this was a hunter that I was speaking to. So he wouldn't be offended by that if I had killed that pronghorn. Okay, then.
And you made a connection.
Right. But the other side of that is that maybe I'm speaking to somebody who's a vegan for, you know, the reasons ethical reasons. They just don't want animals to be killed. I mean, listen, I volunteer for a rescue. There are many vegans in my rescue, right? I like to think I eat a primarily plant-based diet. But the point is, somebody might see that and might see that other skull up on the wall behind me and think and start judging me for that.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe that's a topic for another conversation.
Yeah, could be, yeah.
Is how, you know, how we, those biases and how we judge people and how we can move past that, especially in our really divisive world. Because
yeah, no,
I shouldn't have a fake background. You don't have a fake background. You got a nice picture behind you.
Yeah.
Because now, of course, I'm looking at the screen, which I wasn't the whole time. So, yeah, right.
You know, I'll say that, you know, one of the absolute best CEO I've ever worked for, Doug Merritt. I absolutely have love in my heart for Doug when he was CEO of Splunk. And we were in COVID and, you know, we're all remote. And I remember him getting in on calls, on town halls and meetings, and he would do them from his master bedroom, you know, just his bedroom. Now, you know, I don't know what his house looked like. No idea, but there's a guy that just was one of us, right?
Yep.
He was one of us. And that's what made that culture so unique, as he called it, rarefied air. And that's why we would follow him to the end of the earth, because he was one of us. And, you know, and I think that showed that, you know, he wasn't worried about what was behind him. He wasn't worried about where he was. What he was focused on was his employees. He was focused on our well-being. How are we doing? He was focused on making sure that he gave us the right strategy and the right vision for the company, that we were all part of something bigger than ourselves. And that's what mattered, not what is in the background. So that's what I'll say about that.
Awesome. Well, this was, as always, a great conversation with you.
Yeah.
I will say our next episode, it'll be 2 weeks after this, will be on big tech. Coming to grip with their loss of perks and what they call job anxiety, we refer to as layoff anxiety. So we'll see you next time.
Next time. Thank you all.
Thanks for listening to Authentically Successful After Hours. I'm your host, Carol Schultz.
And I'm your co-host, Rob Swimer. Hey, don't forget to click follow to hear more. And please leave us an honest review and rating, so we can continue to improve and bring you more great stories.
Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.